This podcast is the audio version of the peer-reviewed lecture series from the Academic Emergency Medicine Journal, featuring the Academy for Women in Academic Emergency Medicine series on professional development.
Hello, my name is Jeanette Wolf, and I'm from Bay State Hospital. I'm here to talk to you about part-time academic medicine, possibilities, pitfalls, and pearls as part of the AOM Professional Development series. Over the next few minutes, we will discuss the following: the changing landscape of academic medicine, the perceptions and realities of working part-time, some concrete logistics to consider when going part-time, and finally, we'll talk about some part-time booby traps and tips to avoid them. The talent pool of the American medical force is changing. Women now make up about 50% of medical students. Statistically, although female physicians are more likely to be married to another physician or professional, it is becoming more and more common for male physicians to also have working partners. Thus, male or female, most physicians are now feeling more pressured by the responsibilities of their outside lives. In addition, there are significant generational differences, with younger physicians placing much more emphasis on a healthier work-life balance. Who goes part-time? Well, the number one group is still women with small children. According to a 2006 Association of American Medical College survey, about 25% of female physicians under the age of 50 work part-time, compared to about 2% of men. But the second biggest part-time group is men who are transitioning into retirement. But there are other many reasons to cut back, including health-related injuries, aging relatives, the pursuit of an additional degree, or bridging into a new career. What data do we know about the work-life balance of part-time physicians? Well, if you look at all comers, not just physicians practicing in academic medicine, part-time physicians appear to have the following: greater job satisfaction, they deliver equal or higher quality of care, they receive similar or higher patient satisfaction scores, and for the prorated hours they work may actually be more efficient than a full-time equivalent. It may be that physicians who work reduced hours have an extra buffer from burnout and come to work more energized. Less is known about part-time work in academia, and the data about what is known can be confusing, as heterogeneous groups are often lumped together. For example, Surgeon A, who works full-time in a private group but covers the teaching ward every other month, might be grouped together with Surgeon B, who is a hospital employee working three-quarters time. Likewise, it's difficult to define and compare full versus part-time work amongst physicians in different academic tracks. And finally, very little is published about part-time work in our field of emergency medicine, so most of the research on this topic comes from other specialties. When we consider all of these factors, it appears that about 10% of physicians working in academia are part-timers. Now, what are the benefits of working academically part-time? Harrison did an in-depth analysis of this question in a small group of part-time women along with their chiefs. On the work front, part-timers felt they had increased time to focus on desired projects, increased ability to pursue advanced degrees and new scholarship, and increased visibility as a role model for others. Advantages to their outside life included greater amount and quality of family time, increased personal wellness, increased community involvement. Their chiefs felt that part-time employment increased the amount of unpaid work, increased departmental diversity, challenged institutional culture, and provided role models to others. Now, before we go on, I'd like to take a minute and talk about realistic expectations about cutting back. In general, these expectations can be divided into two pools: objective and subjective. First, objective. Some people cut back for very specific reasons, like getting an MBA or coaching a team. For them, it's quite easy to look back 2 years from now to see if they reached their goal. But what about subjective expectations? Are you cutting back for something a little more elusive and abstract, like a better work-life balance? If so, I would encourage you to dig a little deeper and explore specifically what it is about your current job or home life that feels unfulfilling or overwhelming. This is really important for two reasons. Number one, you may be able to tweak something and stay full time. And number two, you will clarify whether or not cutting back will actually improve your life. Let's start with work. What are the obstacles and opportunities? And what are the priorities within your department? This last point is really important, as you will be a stronger negotiator if you can align your request with the needs and priorities of your department. Here are three common obstacles. First, meetings. If you're in a weekly committee that meets at the exact same time you need to pick up your toddler, are any of the following possible? Rotating the time of the meeting, picking up your child early and teleconferencing from home, or hiring an additional sitter to pick up your child and start dinner. Now, what about scheduling? If you need a more consistent schedule, is it possible to take a greater share of the undesirable shifts like weekend, overnights, and holidays to increase your bargaining power? And number three is FaceTime. FaceTime, or the expectation that your non-clinical work should be done at the hospital during banker's hours, is a really big deal at some institutions. The intention of FaceTime is to increase your department's visibility, collaboration, and collegiality. If FaceTime is important where you work, you may still have some wiggle room. Could you propose a set number of days that you would commit to being in the hospital and then post other days that you are available to meet with residents or colleagues off-site? As change comes slow to some more traditional institutions, you might also consider negotiating for a trial period. Agree to a 6-month period with predefined goals and then reassess what worked and didn't. Remember that good bosses should ultimately want to focus on objective outcomes. Now, what about your home life? What fills you up and rejuvenates you? How can you spend your money and time differently so you have more time to do that good stuff? Now, most of us don't think twice about splurging on a yearly vacation, yet many of us are still reluctant to invest in some of the simpler conveniences that would make our day-to-day lives much easier. Outsourcing can be difficult, especially if you have an internal expectation that you should be able to do it all. Consider the following mantra: I am gratefully investing in my resiliency. And honestly, if you're worried about cost, if you're already thinking about cutting back, you sure could pay for a lot of extra house cleaning and lawn care with the money you'll be giving up. Okay, let's talk about childcare for a second, as caring for young children is the number one reason people go part-time. If you have kids, make an honest appraisal of your current system. Is it really working? Here are some different options to consider. Daycare with bridging. Bridging refers to having a sitter pick up your kids from daycare and help out until you get home. The college lineup. Consider hiring a larger number of sitters for fewer hours so that you have an extra safety net for unexpected callouts. And au pairs. This may be a really good option if you are a single parent or if you partner along with somebody else who has non-traditional hours, as au pairs live with you and generally have more flexible hours. And finally, what about relatives? Do you have parents or cousins or nephews that may be in their own transition period and are looking for work? Again, it's really worthwhile looking at some of these subjective expectations because it will help you clarify your intentions, set up realistic expectation, and confirm that you're still working at the right institution. Now, moving on, there are several timelines you should consider on your part-time quest, including where you are in your career, situational restraints, and the immediate needs of your group. As we move into this section, I'd like to be very clear that when we are talking about cutting back hours, there is no wrong time, just different times associated with different considerations and challenges. So let's meet Jen, a hypothetical new grad. This is Jen's 7-year timeline. We're going to follow her from her chief residency as she transitions into a productive junior faculty member. Now let's consider the differences of Jen going part-time at point A versus point B. If Jen goes part-time at point A, she has less experience and less ability to negotiate for protected time. In addition, if Jen is on a clinical track, she will likely stay on this track unless she consciously seeks out the skills and mentoring she needs to change tracks. If Jen goes out at point B, she is more of a proven entity, is in a better position to negotiate. Importantly, she has also begun to hone in on her academic niche and has a greater network of colleagues and mentors. At point B, it is also easier for her to continue on her desired professional trajectory. These factors are likely the reason, per Levine's 2008 article, that women who go part-time later in their academic career are more satisfied with their career than women who cut back earlier. All right, sometimes major life events happen so unexpectedly that all you can do is scramble and throw something together. But fortunately, in most situations, you have a little time to plan. What is your projected start date and how flexible is it? We don't work in a vacuum. If your personal timeline has some flexibility, it's important to consider the needs of the rest of your group. Here are some considerations. Are you currently fully staffed? Are there anticipated leaves? When are the new hires starting? And when does your institutional financial calendar begin and the schedule come out? Now we're going to move on to logistics. What are the specific nuts and bolts that you need to know? Start with your HR office to find out what is on the books already at your institution. Bristol's group nicely showed in their 2008 paper that these policies are highly variable and all over the map. Specifically, some institutions have clear and explicit policies to ensure consistency and transparency, while others are purposely vague to give chairs increased powers to make individual deals. Next, seek out others who have already gone through this process to find out what they learned and what they would have done differently. It is extremely important that you know exactly what's on the table, and the big three are money, schedule, and advancement. Let's start out with money. What is your salary, and how will future raises be determined? How will your benefits be prorated? What will happen to your health, life, disability, and malpractice insurance? What happens to your retirement plans? And will you still get money for CME and/or association fees? Now, what about your schedule? How will your shifts be distributed? This is an area that if you're willing to take a full-time proportion of such undesirable shifts like weekends and overnights, that you may have some extra chips at the negotiation table. Finally, think about call, vacation, and holidays. Next up is professional advancement. If you work at an institution with tenure, how will this be impacted? Some institutions allow tenure extensions for part-timers and others are less flexible. You need to know the rules up front. Also, figure out what happens to administrative assistants, office space, committee work, and your access to mentors. If you are the trailblazer in your group, consider a trial period to test out the bugs. Finally, factor in future considerations such as the possibilities of returning to full-time status at a later date. So you've done your homework. Now it's time to sit down and negotiate. Here are some general thoughts. Be prepared. Set up an official meeting, have your data ready, and practice your approach. Practice walking in positively primed by visualizing an empowering moment from your past. This will help you feel more focused and more confident. Remember to be patient. You may not reach the agreement after one meeting. We're going to end the talk by discussing some pitfalls associated with part-time work and some pearls to avoid them. So remember Harrison's study about part-time physicians and their chiefs? Well, they also looked at the disadvantages of going part-time. For the physicians, this included less pay and benefits. For the hours they actually worked, they were paid proportionately less. They also had a slower career advancement, they were given less desirable projects, and they risked marginalization. What were the chiefs' view? Well, the chiefs were worried about playing fair and balancing the different demands of full and part-timers' needs. In addition, the chiefs were concerned about developing and tracking realistic non-clinical expectations and about career advancement. Plus, they too were worried that part-timers risked isolation and marginalization. Unfortunately, this professional marginalization appears to be more directed towards women than men. So pearl number one is to be prepared for backlash. If anyone doubts the significance of this issue, I would refer you to Karen Siebert's controversial 2011 New York Times editorial, which was highly critical of part-time female physicians. In our own field of emergency medicine, this issue was explored in a 2011 survey that found women and men face different consequences when going part-time. 23% of women versus 15% of men felt that part-time status negatively impacted their reputation. And 20% of women versus no men felt like it was likely to limit their abilities to achieve their long-term goals. So what's the solution? Be upfront and transparent with your colleagues. Try, although I'm going part-time, I intend to give full effort. It is extremely important to stay involved, visible, and contribute high-quality work to at least one project in one committee. Pearl number two, be aware of time creep. Be cognizant of your time. Clinically, part-timers are often used as buffers to help even out schedule gaps. But even if you pick up a bunch of shifts, it may dilute the reasons you went part-time in the first place, as well as create a mismatch between your salary and benefits package. Non-clinically, it may be tempting to pick up a lot of extra projects. The problem is you are not going to get paid for a lot of them. The solution is learning to prioritize your non-clinical work. At the top of your list should be your own long-term interest, even if this requires a lot of your own time, because ultimately, you want to align your passions with your job so you get paid for doing what you enjoy the most. Next, invest in projects that have significant priority within your department. It's important to be a visible team player to your chief, as he or she will be responsible for divvying up future spoils. Third in line would be projects that give you new skills or access to new networks. After these top three, start thinking about projects that you may be able to unload. The next piece of advice is segue, segue, segue. Maximize the work that you are already doing. For example, if you just wrote up a research paper, capitalize on a literature search you already did, and consider developing a new resident lecture, writing a review article, joining a national committee, etc., etc. Your goal is to become a source expert. Pearl number four is to stay on your chief's and colleagues' radar. Try to meet with the key players in your department at least once every 6 months. During this time, exchange ideas and updates and identify areas for potential future projects. Participate in your department's swap exchange. Honestly, most colleagues don't care how many papers you publish. They just want to know you can work their shift for them next Saturday night. So you need to figure out a way that you can exchange in this important currency and make it very visible to your colleagues. So in conclusion, find your own path, but remember to take a compass. Create long-term goals, stay on your departmental radar, and always keep active in at least one project and one committee. And when all is said and done, celebrate your decision. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck on your journey.